This is the Integrate Intelligently podcast from CatTalk Software, a podcast about the people, programs, and processes that come together to make businesses successful. At CatTalk, we're a software integration company, but we believe this idea of intelligent integration goes much deeper than software. On today's episode, we'll dive into CatTalk's next core value, relentless reinvention, perhaps the most foundational and challenging principle in business. Now, let's hear from our hosts, Jeff Brickler and Scott Brickler.
Hi, welcome to the Integrate Intelligently podcast with Jeff and Scott Brickler. I'm Jeff Brickler, your host, and welcome back to the second episode of the CatTalk Integrate Intelligently podcast. Thrilled to have the first inaugural episode. I'm joined again here with my brother and CEO of CatTalk, Scott Brickler. So, Scott, it's great sharing the stage with you, or the mic with you again.
Oh, it's awesome. The first one was a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to this one as well. So we're actually recording this during the 4th of July week. So it's hot outside, and it's going to be inside in the air conditioning doing a recording. So.
Yeah, ready for that. Man, I'm ready for the few days off myself. So I'm looking forward to this conversation. We always have good conversations, so I'm excited about that. Get an opportunity, an hour dedicated every week to chat. So this is great. So last time, Scott, we talked about our moniker, our tagline, Integrate Intelligently. And I really like that discussion around both from a software perspective, but also from our partnerships and how we work with different folks. And so today, my goal was to talk a little bit about our core values. And I think those core values, you developed them, are really born out of your personality, but also your life experience. And so I wanted to definitely get into those, because I think the company, the way it's structured and what we're trying to achieve as individuals, but also with our customers, is representative of the values we bring. And so, Scott, one of the values is this relentless reinvention. And I wanted to talk a little bit at first before get your insights on that relentless reinvention, kind of what it means, what you kind of, in your words, what you talked about it was and what it does. So that relentless reinvention here at CatTalk is really centered around the concept of a continuous improvement. For you, coming from a manufacturing background, it makes a lot of sense that continuous improvement would be at the foundation of the values, both personally and professionally. So it talks about how, in that relentless reinvention, it reflects our culture and your really your personal and professional goals, personality of constantly striving to improve, to get better all the time, right? To that that desire to never be satisfied with where you are, where the company is, but really trying to improve yourself. And that the better we get, and the better our leaders get, our people who work for us, our staff, the better they get, the better the everything gets, right? And so that mindset of perpetual learning, continuous improvement, is what will help improve our customer experience, improve us as individuals, right? And be able to overcome those challenges. And of course, that's this, you coming from manufacturing, and I think even in Japanese manufacturing, that continuous improvement is a part of that, and industrial engineering, optimizing the process, it's your degree. All of that's kind of interwoven into that continuous incremental improvement. Can you talk a little bit about how you came up with that idea of that relentless reinvention? What resonated? What spoke to you about that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny. I mean, when we created all the values, and this is actually if I had to pick a favorite, this is actually my favorite value, because it's probably the one I came up with first. And continuous improvement being, really the value. But when I created all the values, I wanted them to be easy to remember. So we created them all as alliterations. So you notice that with Integrate Intelligently or Relentless Reinvention, they all kind of have this alliteration effect to them. But really the idea is it does go back to the industrial engineering roots of, if you're not familiar with industrial engineering, it's the idea of it's process engineering. You're trying to continuous improvement engineering. And that does come from manufacturing, which a lot of manufacturing has this idea of Kaizen, which is Japanese for continuous improvement. I believe that's the Japanese for continuous improvement. And this idea of refining what you do and finding a better way of doing it all the time. And that improvement is a continuous thing, something you're always looking for. And I think just naturally, when I look at a process or a product or anything that we do, I mean, you could probably tell this from some of the meetings that we're in. It's like, sometimes we'll have an issue that comes up, and I'm more interested personally in like, how do I create a better process or a better system around this thing so it doesn't happen again, as opposed to fixing the thing in front of, like the actual thing in front of me at the moment at that time. It's more of like my personality, because I'm much more of a systems thinker, and then just refining that and figuring out how to set things up in a way that the problem never reoccurs. I think the most frustrating thing to me is a problem that reoccurs over and over again. And I always want to kind of figure out like, how do we fix the system and how we improve it, as opposed to just dealing with the issue at hand. I think of like, I don't want to play whack-a-mole. That makes a good sense. Like, just like, oh, issue comes up, whack it. And then the same issue comes up again, you whack it, and then you don't really get anywhere. I'm always looking back and saying, how do we make this better so that problem never happens again? And maybe there's also this idea in development called the DRY principle: don't repeat yourself. So to me, it's like, if the issue comes up and we need to squash it so it doesn't repeat itself again. If I need to come up with an idea, I want to do it once and I have to repeat myself again. So it's all about that. So it's basically draining my personality to just always look at things as like, how can we improve this process? How do we make it better every day? And then there's 1% there's 1% changes every day. They stack and they compound. So it's like investing, where you have compound interest over time. The 1% stacked every day is a huge improvement over the long haul. And if you think of it that way, you're going to be much, much better in a year from now than you are today.
What do you think was the driver for that? I mean, obviously, through your schooling and high school and university, and then of course in your career, where do you think you first noticed that desire for continuous improvement? That's just something that didn't, was it always there, or something that like, you know, you started to think about and do, or was it influenced by, you know, just by your education, your career? Like, where was the origin of that, do you think?
I don't know. I think that as long as I can remember, it's been like this. I mean, I just think the ability, I just want to do things that are extraordinary. And then in order, you know, think about the word extraordinary, it requires extra, doing things that most people don't do. Right. And then, in order to do that, you have to become more in order to do more things, right? So you have to learn more. You have to figure out where the problem is and fix it and move on. That's including yourself or a system or a process or a product. So, I mean, it's always, I call it the growth game, you know, how can you grow faster? And then we look at like, from a business standpoint, that, you know, there's this idea of the law of lid, you know, the company will only grow as far as the leader goes. So from a company perspective, it's absolutely necessary to have a continuous improvement mindset and a growth game that you're playing with. But even when you're younger, you're like, if I just want to do epic stuff, if I want to do things that nobody else has done, I've got to figure out how to become the person who can do that. And that just always appealed to me. It's like, I mean, I just don't want to have, I want to have an extraordinary life. I don't want to leave anything, you know, I want to put it all out there. I leave everything on the field. It's always been my personality.
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, I think, you know, you and I being brothers, I think what I always found, we have very similar, people would say like we're similar yet different. And I think I had the same personality in some ways, of that relentless reinvention. For me, the origin was really just about wanting to be different from everyone else. I just didn't want to do the same thing that everybody else did. I don't know why, I just like, oh, I don't want to do that. It's boring. I'm going to be like everybody else. I want to do something different. And so I think that's where for me, the origins of that desire, the origins of reinventing was to do something unique, different from what was typical. It felt better. But I think it's the outcome's the same, right? Whether you're motivated just to get better intrinsically, or just you wanted to be different or do it differently. I think, you know, the goal is actually the same.
Just to follow up on that real quick, because I mean, if you think about it, I mean, we don't really know, not to get like metaphysical, we don't really know. All we know is we have this life, right? All we really know for sure. And it's like, why not make that the absolute best it could be? How can you become the you know, the 10.0 version of yourself, be the person that you're, that you would, I think it was, I heard a quote one time that said like, heaven was meeting yourself and you basically became the person that you could have been. And then hell was meeting the person, you know, you could have been, but not having got there. And that's a, and I think of that a lot. It's like, okay, how do you become that 10 point over? How do you become that person that when you get there, that person would say, yes, you did it. You did the thing that you did everything you could.
Right.
And I think that's it's kind of a great frame for me. I think the way to look at it. So
how is the last 9 years or 10 years or 15 years, how have, you reinvented CAD Talk, or what's different in terms of, I think about like AI and what AI is doing now in ChatGPT and what it will do, right? I mean, obviously ChatGPT and AI will give us transcripts for this podcast, or for every meetings, it'll just transcribe it and give us a summary. AI has been a part of CAD Talk. I've been part of our Integrate Intelligently tagline. How has that influenced you and your thoughts about this with our values of relentless reinvention and coming up with those types of things?
Yeah. I mean, AI is a big disruptor. I mean, if you think about it, it's going to disrupt a lot of, just like the internet did. I guess I'm old enough now to have seen the internet come, all that. And I've seen disruptions happen a few times in my career, and AI is the next one. There's a huge potential for it to disrupt a lot of industries. And one of the parts of relentless reinvention is to either, if you don't disrupt yourself, someone else will come and disrupt you. And so you're always looking at your product and the things that you're doing, and you're saying, well, how would somebody do this without us? Like, what would cause that? And how can I provide more value than people expect to stay relevant? Because all products drive the commodity over time, all of them, things become very commonplace. So you're having to reinvent yourself and reestablish value in the market. How can I stay valuable? How can I provide something that no one else can provide? How can I do something that provides more value than customers could possibly expect? And it's so much different. What they pay for and the value they get is that huge gap. You want to kind of make that gap as high as possible. And AI has the capability of doing that, and doing something that we hasn't happened in history. So there's two different ways you could approach it. One would be, well, I'm afraid of it. I just don't want to, Terminator's coming. I don't want to look at this thing. And then the other way would be like to just lean into it and really figure it out and learn about it and figure out how to leverage it so you can provide value. Here's something that will always be here, regardless of the technology and all the things that are coming. The ability to provide value will always be needed. You need that ability to provide value, and AI is just a tool in order to get there. But you have to pay attention to tools. You have to be reinventing yourself. You have to be changing the game and adjusting to it as it's happening. And that's why we've embraced AI now for quite a long time. And as the product has evolved, there's different levels of AI. Like, one of the things I would say that CAD Talk is today is more of like what they call an expert system type of AI, which is a rules-based engine, which is a lower level form of AI. But in the future, we have things that we're working on are going to make that even more powerful and provide more value. Okay, keep talking about value. It's going to provide more value by doing more things than it does today.
Why is this reinvention, why is it important to CAD Talk? I mean, CAD Talk, I mean, since I've worked it here and we've grown, I mean, CAD Talk's always worked, right? It's always been provide the value that it does. It does the job we say it does, and we've improved it over time. But, why is that important for a product that, it works fundamentally the same way that it did when you first designed it, 20 years ago? How do we weave that reinvention into a product that essentially just does the same thing that it's always done?
I think that's part of the AI type of capability, but some things, some problems, you solve them and then, they become, and then, you solve them and they're done, right? There's nothing really more to do with it. But this problem has more and more edges to it, and you see more and more, I guess it's like an onion, right? As you peel out the layer, you get past the first problem, which is like, I just need to move data from here to here. And the second problem is like, well, I'm thinking about, I need to augment that data with intelligence. I know what's going on. I'm a manufacturing engineer. I need to figure out routings and times and things like that. And then eventually, like, the AI could start predicting those types of things and seeing it. So you're just taking, you're taking more things off of the plate to allow the engineer to get more levels and to get more specificity. I never can say that word, specificity around the, what they're working on. And freeing up more of that time. So, I mean, one of the things we talk about is like the ECN change or the engineering change process and figuring out like how to communicate that. So there's all these layers that it goes back to the theory of constraints. As you release one constraint, another, the constraint moves into another spot, and then you have to attack that constraint, and then it moves to another spot. And then the reason why we keep reinventing is we keep, the constraint changes, so we have to move to where that new one is, so we can continue to provide more value. Because over time, that constraint that we got rid of 20 years ago, in the customer's mind, that's table stakes now. That's no longer a novel thing. That's just something that we do, and a lot of people do it. So you have to keep figuring out how to provide more and more value. That's just the name of the game.
Yeah. So kind of intrinsic in this reinvention, obviously, the ancients knew there was this saying that nothing new under the sun, right? That this concept that there's nothing mm-hmm. really new, nothing really new. Everything's just a reiteration. Like every movie that you make is just some hero story that's been already told, or every novel, every story, and there's nothing really new. But with that being said, is there are new things. So I guess you can't reinvent everything every time, right? So I guess the question is sure. like, there's going to be a part of anything that we do, CAD talk with the product or not, outside of that, or just with us, that you're not reinventing. You're not reinventing your morals every time, or your work ethic. You're not reinventing those things. So how do you just differentiate, even, you know, on a small level with the product or what we're doing with customers, from like, what do you reinvent? What should they just say, right? Because you're not going to reinvent everything every single time. So how do we make sure that we keep what's good, right? We don't reinvent or you know, shiny object syndrome. Like grab this thing over here and fix, you know, or just get bored with it. Like, oh, we can try that. So what I mean by that, how we avoid mistakes? Because, you know, taking that philosophy of reinvention, if you took it to the nth degree, you would just jettison everything all the time. Like, that was working, but let's see if something works even better, right? That and throw all stuff away. So how do you as a business owner, but also as a human, right? How do you make sure that relentless reinvention doesn't go awry, doesn't go, you know, rogue as well?
Sure. Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, it's totally possible that you can do that, and then you can spread your focus around too much. Like everything can be fixed or improved at some point, right? I mean, so a good frame of that would be the theory of constraints as well. Like if you're going to reinvent something, look at where the constraint is in the business or the constraint in that process, go there first. So great book about this is called The Goal. It's like the required
reading. That's what Herbie. Isn't it the one Herbie?
Yeah, the Herbie with the Boy Scouts. Yeah. So like that idea of like figure out where the constraint is in the process of the business and then really focus the reinvention there. That's usually a good, you know, because sometimes you can improve something, you know, it's like, if you prove something that isn't the constraint, you really aren't improving the overall process, right? It's like in manufacturing process, if I'm really good at making, you know, the part, I can be really good at making individual parts, but if none of those parts come together to make the assembly that I need for the customer, then I really didn't solve anything, right? I haven't shipped any product. I haven't made any money. So the idea is not to actually make parts really fast. That's not the constraint. The idea is to make the right parts all together so I can assemble them to then sell it to a customer and make money. So where in the process is that constraint at? Well, is it, I have a laser that makes parts really fast, but I can't deburr them all fast enough. Oh, then the constraint's deburr. So I'm going to look at that. How can I reinvent the deburr area in order to get those parts through? So that will improve the entire process because that's the constraint. The hard part is figuring out where the constraint is. And then, you know, another thing you have to be careful of, I would also recommend is you document assumptions. This is another one that's really interesting. I learned this early in my career is that people always think that you circle around and we repeat history all the time. Like, this is another kind of common thread. It's like, oh, I remember when I started the company back in the early 2000s, like the old guys were like, I was trying to do something new. And the guys were like, oh, we did that in the 70s. That will never work. And I was like, and I was trying to do something with, you know, and I said, guys, they're like, oh, we just go around in circles all the time. And I said, well, I think that's true in some ways, but if you looked at it from one perspective, it is a circle. But if you looked at it from the way it really is, it's kind of like a helix, like a spiral almost, right? Is that you had this concept of like an idea may have been a bad idea in the 70s under the current environment and conditions, like the computers weren't where they were, they're, you know, whatever the climate is at that time, that idea may not work or that process may not work at that time. But 30 years later, which it was like we had better technology and all these things, the capability became more where that idea that you had in the 70s now becomes very feasible, is the best way to do it in the 2000s, right? And especially now you think about that again, like we're, with AI, things that you couldn't, that were constraints 20 years ago, we developed the process originally, are no longer constraints. But if you don't know what the constraints were and you didn't document the assumptions when you made the decision the first time, you're bound to that forever. So this is the way we always do it. And you're like, well, why don't we change it? And you're like, well, because like that's the way we do it. But if you document, like, these are the assumptions that I made when we made that decision to go this direction, you can always revisit them and go, are those assumptions still true? Yes, this is still the best process. Are those assumptions not true based on the current environment? Oh, actually, they're not. We could actually, that thing there is no longer true. Maybe I can come up with a better process. And that's a way to kind of decide, to keep yourself from like reinventing all the time just for the sake of reinventing. You actually have a framework to kind of keep that under control.
Yeah, it makes sense. So I think about that, you know, reinvention, of course, isn't just technical, to your point, and the constraints, but also it could be about, you know, the company, the people, the companies made up of people. People change and they reinvent, and things they change themselves, and when they're change the environment around them. How have you seen CAD Talk change? Mm-hmm. Right, it's been around nearly 20 years. How is that relentless reinvention woven, or how has it changed CAD Talk itself? Right, how has that process happened? What have you seen as the biggest changes over the last, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20 years?
Yeah, I think that the companies, I mean, it's probably more general to companies, but the there's this idea, like, I mean, I think it's like the company breaks on threes and tens, like number of employees and revenue and things like that. And the way you did things, as a number of employees grow or the revenue grows or whatever that is, what used to work doesn't work anymore. So like, and fortunately, this actually happens too. It happens with people. Like the people, some people are really, really good when the company's small. And then when the company gets to a certain size, they don't grow fast enough for those people, in order for the company to be where it's at. And that's the hard part. I think we kind of stigmatize that a lot in the company. You know, people say, oh, you so-and-so, you know, was here since the beginning or whatever. And then you're like, well, they didn't grow with the company, and they would probably be happier or do well, you know, with the other company that's starting up again. So like, and those are all, that's something you find a lot of, is that like, is that the, in order for the company to grow or to reinvent itself, you also have to change your thinking and way things are done and what you're, and then kind of, fall in love with the growth as opposed to falling in love with the way it is today and being okay with that and moving forward. But there's tons of things. Like, I mean, I used to write all the code. I mean, and like, I remember, was it like, oh, it's been a while now, but like, I think we were talking about it and you were like, and I was like, well, I don't think anybody's going to be able to do this part of the coding. I think it was like, and then that was a limiting belief that I had at the time. And then we're like, oh, but if we educate people, we tell people what it's like and how it works, maybe that could happen. And I did an experiment and it worked, and we were able to, you know, spread that out. And it was a limiting factor. But if I continue to believe that, then we would have stunted our growth. We would have stunted what we could have done. And so it's like constantly kind of questioning those assumptions and, you know, making sure that you're, you know, figure out what the limiting belief is and going from there. So it's still the theory of constraints, but it's now personal. Like, what's the metal block for me? What's keeping me from doing this thing? And is that actually true? So the process is almost exactly the same. You're just applying it to your own personality and your own beliefs, as opposed to an outside process.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it's happened even to me, right? Like, I remember, I mean, obviously I've been at CAD Talk forever and I had a different career before this. And so, I mean, I remember thinking when I was teaching, I was teaching Latin for 11 years. And I remember talking to you before I was going to come to work at CAD Talk. And I remember thinking I didn't think I could do anything else, or I didn't know if I could do anything else, right? You say, because you make these assumptions like, well, I spent 25 years studying something from a very young age through university and through did all this university and graduate school and working in a career and doing all of that, and think about, like, remember thinking, I don't know if I can, you know, the theory, the constraint, or the could I reinvent myself, right? Could I do something completely different from what I was doing? Like, obviously the answer is yes, but and so that was a huge confidence builder. I think if you, to your point, you talk about like growing or reinventing yourself, when you're able to do that, and you are successful at that, that builds a tremendous amount of confidence, I think, in the person to say like, oh, I was one way before. I thought I couldn't do something, and now I'm different. I'm completely different now. I've changed careers. I've changed. I mean, even within Cat Talk, I've changed careers multiple times. So kind of constantly changing all the time. And so that, for me, at least personally, it's helped build my own confidence that, hey, I really can do any of those types of things. I can do any of those types of things if I just focus my mind on it and be open to the fact that it's going to be tough at first and I'm going to make a lot of mistakes and I'm not going to know what I'm doing. But over time, if I keep at it, I will get there. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you felt that same way, or
I think the thing that people do, I think it like that makes it scary is if you spend a lot of time learning something, you conflate the skill that you learned with all the time that took, but you were actually learning a bunch of other meta skills, right? You were learning how to learn, you were learning how to do this other thing. And the meta skills still carry over, right? Like the learning how to study and what, how much work it takes to do something and all that stuff kind of carried over. So you're conflating both the meta skill learning with the first thing that you learned. And you think, oh my gosh, am I going to start over again? I'm going to spend another 10 years getting to the same spot. But you realize when you learn the new thing, you get there twice as fast or three times as fast because you're not relearning the meta skills. And that's what's happening. And then really what you got good at, you get good at learning a new thing. And that's actually the meta skill that really accelerates everything. And then it becomes less scary to take on a new thing. It's like, oh, all I got to do is like, I already know how to learn. I just got to put the time in to learn the new thing, you know?
I already know. Yeah, that's a good point. It's like I often say it, but people get tired of hearing about it because I make so many analogies to management or demonstrations or lots of things I do here at Cat Talk. I think, oh, so similar to what I used to do as a teacher in so many ways that people would look at me kind of weird. Like, well, I don't, first of all, they're not teachers, so they wouldn't have known that, but also because it just seems like so disconnected. But to your point, like those skills that you build doing something, working hard, the level of effort, the concentration, the tenacity, right? Like a dog with a bone, not letting go of that and just keeping it and working at it. Those are the skills that you're really honing. It's that discipline, that work ethic, those are the real skills that are important in life, but also in any kind of career, any kind of company. It's that constant desire to get better and learn new things. Why, this is kind of off topic, but why do you think so many companies and cultures don't value that really, right? Because we go to university, like myself included. I went to university. I got scholarships. I mean, why I went to study Latin and all that's very like it, that story has been told by me lots of times by to loved ones. But like in the sense of, you know, I decided to do a thing and I was doing that thing. And because it's kind of the society, even the work culture tells you like, hey, you got to learn this skill, learn how to do this thing, right? And then everybody wants to hire somebody with experience. I want a person with experience. I want a person who already knows everything and wants to do all that. And that's how it was growing up. I remember thinking, you know, I need to get to college. I need to pay for college to build some skills so I could get a job. I needed to figure out how to do that. Now you might ask, I don't know how you thought Latin was going to get you there because that's not exactly but my point only is
sure.
That
well, yeah.
As a society, maybe it's changing a little bit now, but as a society, we haven't valued these generic skills or these transferable skills, right? The fact that you can like, man, this guy knows how to work hard, knows how to figure stuff out. He's like a utility infielder on the baseball, right? He can go here, go there. This guy could do, you know, to yourself included, like kind of that entrepreneurial spirit. I could do whatever it takes, wherever it takes, whenever it takes, whatever needs to be done. A lot of people don't, that's not someone's ideal life, but we don't reward that, I guess, in our work and work culture in general, not our work culture at Cat Talk, but just work culture, right? We don't go hire that guy because I know he'll figure it out. We go hire that guy because he knows how to do it already.
You think about, like, I think I was down on college for a long time, you know, and I don't, you know, I went to engineering school and things like that. And I was kind of claiming like, well, nothing I learned in engineering school applies to the business world. I mean, And actually, I think as I get older, I really think about these meta skills. I think I was wrong. Actually, there's the meta skill of learning how to figure out something out that's very difficult, or learning how to study and really work at something. Now, did I do calculus every day? No, but I remember I actually took 2 years off in college between Calc 1 and or Calc 2 and 3. And I came back after 2 years off. I worked as an electrician, another story for another day, but for 2 years and came back and then had to do calculus again. It was hard the first time, but then I realized, if you went through high school and everything was really easy, you never really learned how to study, right? And so, but when I came back and I had to learn calculus 3, I just studied like 3-4 hours a day for the entire semester in order to get like a B in calculus. And I remember that being one of the first times in my life, I'm like, oh, this is what studying looks like. This is what working hard at something is actually like. This is what it feels like. This is how hard it is and soul crushing it can be sometimes. And that skill of knowing like, oh, I just got to put it in the volume. I got to put it in the effort. That's what it feels like. That's the thing I was learning, not calculus. And then if you think about it, it's just poorly marketed when you think about it from college standpoint, or like, you're going to learn how to be an engineer, or you're going to learn how to be a Latin, learn Latin or classics. No, I'm going to teach you how to do something hard. And I'm going to teach you this meta. So really teaching the meta skills. But you're right. I mean, people always value, from a business standpoint, you're like, well, if I could hire somebody who already knows, then I'm not paying for that experience. But that is where if you're paying for somebody who already knows, that person tends to be more expensive, right? You pay for that expertise. And if you could afford that, then that is actually the fastest way to do it. If you're early on in the company and you have less money, then you would invest in the person who can then learn the skill, right? And then you look for the person to have that skill to be able, the ability to learn the meta skill to learn that. And that's why I think a good advice is like when you're younger and you don't have the skills yet, you should optimize for learning skills, not for salary or for money. You should optimize for learning, not for earnings.
Right, not for money.
Early in your career or early in a new career. I mean, it can be a new career too, right? I mean, you can change. And then that will give you the opportunity. Right. You'd mm-hmm. rather trade the opportunity to work with an environment where you work with, we can learn a lot or work with the best of the best or really figure something out so you can earn in the future. So it really depends on the level of the company. And also the level of the individual, companies tend to have lots of money, tend to just buy the expertise and get it. Companies who are starting out and building, they tend to, will do that. And sometimes companies will do both because there's value in both. So, but that tends to be the way it is. I think, so the reason why we value it is that people want, they want to pay as if you're learning and hope you already have the skills. And it's not the way it works. I mean, that's just not the way, economies work,
right.
I think both are valued if you know what you're actually looking for.
Yeah, I guess that's a good point. It depends what your need is, what your desire, because there's both, right? There's both that desire to hire the person who has that relentless reinvention value when you hire for that person who says, I'm just going to get in there and figure it out, right? And work and learn and excited about doing that versus the person who's like, who maybe less bought into the relentless reinvention, but definitely knows how to do the job that you're asking him or her to do. Both have their upsides, right? But of course, mm-hmm. When I think I came to CAD Talk, like I probably couldn't have gone out and had somebody hire me. Like, oh, you were a Latin teacher, and we're gonna hire you to do whatever, right? This software thing. Like, you don't know anything. I think I was even told that, but you don't know anything. It's like, well, I understood. But, having the ability to learn quickly and dedication, and that's how it matters. It matters a lot. It definitely matters a lot more than I think companies or businesses or people tend to, maybe not, I'm wrong about that, but tend to value. Maybe it's just, it's the type of culture of the company.
Yeah. I mean, I remember I had a business partner back in the early days. He told me, he was like, we were doing one business at the time. And he's like, and I just wasn't that interested in that business as much. And then it was like, he goes, well, you're so good at it. You're probably the best in the world at doing this thing. I mean, like, I'm like, yeah, but I can be best in the world the next thing. I just figure out the next thing. It isn't, to me, like the next thing wasn't a scary thing to go learn. It sounds kind of arrogant, but it's just like, no, the next, I'll just do the same thing again. I'll learn it again.
Right.
And his belief was, it's like, well, you, like, why would you want it? Like, you're already the best. Like, what is it? Why would you change it? And I think it has to do with, like, I was okay with the ego hit of no longer being the best and dropping back down to being a beginner. To me, that stage of beginner to becoming the best is actually the most fun.
It actually is the most exciting. It is the most exciting because it's a diminishing returns, right? Because you're down here in the gutter. You're down here in the gutter, like no nothing. And then you just say, and then really quickly, it's like learning a language. I remember studies, you know, similar, this is anecdotal, but learning a language, you get so excited learning a new language. Oh, I'm learning Spanish or French or Italian or German or Latin or whatever. I'm learning it. And you're like, oh man, you go from zero, I know nothing, to like, oh, I know a bunch. But actually you're like, okay, that jump is big. But then as you go up, that curve gets really steep, right? You're just like, and it just, I see about like this, but it's kind of levels way off. And the improvement goes really slowly. But it is, and it gets less exciting because then that's when the grind happens, right? Like, okay, now it's real. Now it's real. Because you got all that kind of dopamine or that fresh hit of excitement and progress.
Oh, yeah. And there's beauty in the mastery, too. I mean, if you can like really get down to the craftsmanship of being like, of, you know, going from like 90 to 92 to 93 to 95th percentile, these are exponential leaps, right? Like, I think you can become, you know, 90th percentile of any skill within a certain, you know, pretty quickly. It's that percentiles after the 90 that really take a lot of time, a lot of effort, and sometimes it's worth it. Like, but it's like the problem is like, but you have to invest more time, and you only have so much time. That's one thing we all have. So to become, you know, my daughter's in swimming, and she always asks the question, like, you know, like, yeah, you know, like, how do I become, like, well, I mean, you could probably learn how to become, you know, 90th percentile or maybe even 95th percentile if you're lucky. But after that 95th percentile, then the genetic factors start to come in, and all that comes into play, because you're just like, sometimes that has to do with luck. But I truly believe that you can be 90th percentile just by any skill that you want to develop, you know, in a decent amount of time. That's achievable. It's just those last 5-8% or whatever it is, 10% is hard. It takes exponentially longer to get there. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, this is a great conversation. I could go on for this for a long time, but that's great, Scott. Really, you know, I really enjoyed this conversation about relentless reinvention. We really talked about all kinds of aspects of ourselves reinventing ourselves, but also the company itself and where we're trying to go. So I think that's really exciting. So I just wanted to, any parting words before we sign off for today, Scott?
No, I think the only thing I would say is I think it's the relentless reinvention. Once again, it's one of my favorite. It's one of my favorite is value. If I had a favorite of all of them, they're all, I think, representative of values that we have, but it's definitely one of my favorites. And I urge people, it's like, you can do more than you think you can. You're able to, you're capable of way more than you think. I mean, people, I think, stop short of that. And if you kind of had that a belief of like, well, what else could, you know, how could I make that better? How could I refine that? How could I become more? And it's a good frame to work with. I think it makes life more exciting. And then also, well, how much more can I give? How much more can I provide value in the world? And that's just, I think it's a great way to look at things.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Scott. Appreciate the conversation here. I think we're going to wrap it up. So again, thanks everybody for, you know, listening to the second episode of CAD Talks Integrate Intelligently podcast. For those of you who don't know, you know, CAD Talk, Scott's the founder of our CAD Talk software. It is an integration platform between engineering softwares, what I call the alphabet soup of PDM, PLM, and ERP systems, as well as PLM systems. And so, you know, we wanted to start this podcast to kind of share our values, share who we are, share kind of some thought leadership. So I, you know, please subscribe and, you know, watch us here on YouTube and all your podcast channels. You go ahead and visit our website at cadtalk.com. And so that's it for today. If Scott, anything else, and we'll sign off.
I say, if you liked what you saw, please leave us a review. That helps us spread the word to everybody else about this stuff. We're very interested in it, and looking forward to the next one.
All right, Scott, looking forward to the next recording. Now, have a good 4th of July and enjoy the weekend.
You too. Thanks.
Right, thanks.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Integrate Intelligently podcast from CAD Talk Software. Don't forget to subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss future episodes. Video versions of the podcast will be available on CAD Talk's YouTube page, linked in the show notes. The Integrate Intelligently podcast is hosted by CAD Talk CEO Scott Brickler and CRO Jeff Brickler. Our producer is myself, marketing manager John Thomas. If you have a story you want to share on the podcast or you want to partner with us, let us know. Email marketing@cantalk.com and be sure to mention podcast in the subject line.